Hello and welcome to another episode of Tales from the Doghouse Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Ness Jones. I am in Australia and I am from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And with me today is the lovely...
I am Stacey Bell in the US with Focused Fun. Today we are going back to basics. So what we mean by that is that we are going to kind of go and define some of our terms for listeners who are joining us more recently. And just as a refresher for those of you who have been on this journey with us all along. So we'll be doing some definitions. There are so many terms out there for what we would refer to as separation anxiety or separation related behaviors. And so that can be a little bit confusing. So we're gonna try to clear that up for you and talk about how we can identify separation related behaviors as well. So Ness, what do you think is the most common like term used for what we do, like the behavior we treat?
Well, the most common term is separation anxiety, but that is quite broad, really, when you think about it.
I think the technical definition for separation anxiety, though, is more specific than how it's generally used, even amongst trainers. I think a lot of trainers are starting to use separation related behaviors as kind of like or separation related problems, and a lot of the research papers refer to it in that way as well, as kind of the umbrella term for a kind of suite of behaviors. But separation anxiety, kind of the old school, I'm not going to say old school is not right, but the definition that the more technical definition, I guess, is different than how we generally use it. How we generally use it is kind of interchangeable for separation-related behaviors or separation-related problems as that umbrella thing. But the technical definition is more a dog who cannot be separated from its one or two special people. So it's not only that they can't be alone, but it's what we would commonly refer to as hyper-attachment, right? Like they have that intense attachment to one or two figures in their life. And so even if they're with a sitter who they don't have a relationship with, that dog would still struggle.
And I mean, we do, as you say, we call that hyper attachment, but that is severe. And then of course you've got different levels, that's not the right word I'm looking for, but different sort of that big umbrella term. We've got different kind of types of separation anxiety and different, why can't I think of the right word? Oh, God.
Because it's like...
It's too early in the morning here, Stacey. Yeah.
It is.
Different, things.
Go with things. Things can cover it.
Yeah, different levels, so some of them exhibit more intense signs. Intensity might be a good word. Different intensities of separation anxiety, starting from the least, because we are talking about umbrella, so separation-related behaviours, the least kind of signs which come under another umbrella, being sort of frustration / FOMO, fear of missing out. And then you've got right up to the highest level, which is the hyper-attachment, and where they're having a complete meltdown when the owner leaves or their significant person leaves.
Right. So some terms I think that you might hear if you're looking on the internet or reading articles about separation related behaviors is isolation distress. And that is just when a dog can't be alone, right? So it doesn't have that same level of attachment to it like separation anxiety does. So separation anxiety is pretty much isolation distress, plus they have to be with their special people. Isolation distress is just they can't be alone, right? So as long as they're with anybody, they're okay. Another kind of related term that you might hear is confinement phobia or
containment
or confinement. And, you know, some dogs, it's only like once you get them out of the crate or the confinement area, they're okay. So it's really just confinement phobia. But a lot of dogs who have separation related behaviors, being confined will exacerbate them, right? So we always talk about more choice, more space is better for most dogs with separation related behaviors. But there are some dogs, in fact, I just worked with a dog last week whose pet parents contacted me for a package. And as we were going through some of the kind of normal rule outs, they were saying, you know, how he injures himself getting out of the crate and all of that stuff. And I was like, well, have you ever tried him out of the crate? And they're like, no, we haven't. Mm-hmm. And I was like, do that first before you buy a package. And it turned out that the dog was fine.
Was that
absolutely fine?
Wow.
out of the crate. It was only down to confinement. So that's really interesting, but it can be the whole picture, like in this case, but more commonly, I think it's, or at least how I run into it, is that it just makes it harder for the dogs, like we've talked about in other episodes.
Just touching on that, I think, and we have talked about this before, but it never hurts to talk about it again. Mm-hmm. And in relation to containment phobia and letting the dog out of the crate. And I mean, there's a lot of owners that don't want to let their dog out of the crate for very good reasons. From mm-hmm. their perspective, is maybe their dog will jump out of a two-story window. It has happened.
Right.
I know of at least two cases where that has happened, and I'm sure there's a lot more. Or the dog is literally destroying the house when they're left outside of the crate. But this type of training that we do, you can still let them out of the crate and give them that freedom. And because we're always keeping them, and we're going to discuss this next time we record, but we're always keeping them under threshold and setting them up for success. And we'll talk about what under threshold means, but we're always setting them up for success. So there's no danger of the dog jumping out windows, destroying
right.
anything, because you're going to be watching them on a live camera feed. So
yeah.
And then often what happens is that dog's just a lot better. And you've got to look at the danger of keeping them in the crate and possibly really, you know, hurting themselves.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard some horror stories as well, Stacey. You know,
yes.
The owner comes home, the dog's like literally covered in blood, missing its fingernails, mm-hmm. its toenails. I told you it's early here. yeah, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, so there's some good reasons not to keep them in the crate, and it is doable because of the type of training we do.
Right.
So we should touch on that. I think it's important to.
Yes, I do too. So what can, so when we talk about separation related behavior, separation anxiety, isolation distress, like whatever label we're calling it, and labels, you know, they can be helpful. They're a kind of shorthand, but as long as we're like talking about the same thing, they're helpful. But if nobody really knows what we're talking about, it can be just confusing, right? So when we talk about separation related behaviors, like we said, it is an umbrella term. So it can encompass a lot of different behaviors. But what we're really focusing on here is that the behaviors happen, as the title suggests, when the dog is separated from its person or people in general. So what are some things that we commonly see, Ness?
Oh, so there's some really obvious signs that a dog is in distress when the owner leaves. Of course, there's, I would say probably the most common would be the barking, the howling, the whining. So vocalization in some form would definitely mm-hmm. be one of the most commonly reported one. And then, of course, there's things like attempts to escape around exit points. So the owners mm-hmm. will come down and around either the doors or the windows, the owners, when they come home, they'll just find the door frames being chewed or the carpet's been got into or the blinds have been destroyed or whatever. So mm-hmm. where the dogs mm-hmm. try to escape to, I guess, potentially get to the owner on the other side of the door.
Right. Right.
Then you've got things like destroying in general, so just tearing into things, whatever that is. I do know a lot of dogs seem to like electrical devices like remote controls and phones and laptops and stuff like that. But also, you know, your soft furnishings and your actual furniture, you know, frames and all that on beds and couches, all that sort mm-hmm. of stuff.
Like a lot of some dogs might drool or pace.
Yeah, pant, pacing.
A lot of times you'll see them kind of run between, like if you have multiple doors in your house, you'll see them run between multiple doors. Or if there's like some dogs will watch from an upstairs window. So they'll go to the maybe the front door up to the upstairs window, back to the back door. And like you'll kind of see like a circuit, but it's not that they're like moseying, it's like they're booking it. So a lot of times you'll see the anxiety there.
I can show you a video of drool if you would like to see it.
Your dogs are master droolers.
No, Bertha is actually, but no, actually a dog, a owner sent me a video, which she has given me permission to share, of drool. Like she came home, it was it's a tiny little dash hound. And she's trying to mop up this drool. This is before we started training together.
Wow.
And it's, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like if you, you know, it's so, you know, when you wipe a cloth through something, mm-hmm. you know, like on a surface and you wipe the cloth through and you see where the cloth's been. With this, it's more like, it was like wiping up a tidal wave of drool.
Oh,
It's shocking. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially for a smaller dog like that.
Do you want to see it?
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Hang on. I'm just going to pause the video. So anybody listening to this on the podcast, I suggest you get onto our YouTube channel, and I also suggest you subscribe to YouTube, our YouTube channel, which is just Tales from the Doghouse, and you'll be able to see this. But I'm just going to play this for those that are watching it on YouTube. So this owner came back to this. This is before she started training with me, and her dog was in a crate, and I'll just play it now.
Is all drool.
Oh, gross.
But I mean, look, that just shows how upset the dog was. I'll play it again.
Oh, that's really a lot of drool.
Yeah, that is a very stressed dog.
Yeah. Oh, the poor thing. Another thing that we haven't talked about yet that can happen is that the dog can have what may appear to be as accidents, right? They may pee or poop mm-hmm. Out of sheer panic at being alone. So that's another kind of pretty big sign there.
Yeah, or even weeing as well. So not necessarily mm-hmm. poop, but yeah. But I've definitely heard of owners coming home and the house is covered in actually funny story. This is not separation anxiety related, but years ago when I was working in an office and my husband was working in a construction site, and we had two Rottweilers, and one of them had a dodgy belly. She was mm-hmm. fine home alone in general, but she obviously needed to go to the toilet and she couldn't. And because she was locked in the house, because I don't like to leave my dogs outside when I'm not there. I don't trust other people. But yes, and he got home from work and she was, or not her, but he rang me up and I'm on the other end of the phone listening, and he's like, oh, you're not going to believe this. He said one of the dogs has pooped, but because she was in a panic to get out and she couldn't, she was running throughout the house, and the house was covered in dog poop.
I'm
on the other end of the phone laughing hysterically because I couldn't get home. He had to clean it up.
Nice.
But the poor dog, I mean, that's pretty bad, but yeah. But yeah, not related to separation anxiety, simply a case of the poor dog had a funny runny tummy, tummy. Okay, so we've talked about the most obvious signs. I don't think we'll go through the less obvious ones now because I don't feel like it's really relevant. I think it would be really helpful for us to maybe run through the less obvious signs in another episode. I think we should talk about the separation anxiety related behaviours. Or separation related behaviors as opposed to frustration / fear of missing out. I think that's kind of a lot of people might contribute the signs that they see, that some of them that we've just gone through, especially, and say my dog's got separation anxiety, because that's what most people think of it as. And in fact, it might actually be a case of, especially with a teenage dog that's got a bundle of energy and doesn't know where to put it and it hasn't had its needs met in terms of exercise and enrichment, and the signs that are on display then look a lot like the signs of separation anxiety, but you need to know what you're looking at. And that's where people like us come into the picture, where we can say, hey, what we are seeing might not necessarily be separation related behaviors. It could actually be a case of dogs not getting this in its life. And then the training kind of looks the same, doesn't it, Stacey? But it can often be a lot quicker than what it would be.
It does. But the other thing is, like, if I have somebody approach me and we even think that it might be frustration, I mean, my first go-to is increase exercise and enrichment, make sure the dog is, you know, getting needs met. So we're talking like vet care, nutrition, exercise and enrichment, rest, adequate rest even can be a big thing for some dogs, making sure like the big things are checked off. And if once we address that, we see that there's a decrease in the home alone behavior problems, you know, then we can be, and, you know, to be fair, it can also be a combination, right? So when we take with every dog that we work with, we would want to make sure all those, the big things are met, right? Because we, even if it's not frustration related, setting a dog for success, up for success, means making sure that those basic welfare needs are met. But a dog can have a combination of frustration and anxiety, or they can just have frustration, or they can just have anxiety, right? So I think what you said is a really big one, is that when a dog is anxious, we notice that the behavior is more persistent over time, is a lot of times more intense, but sometimes not, you know, that can be really dog dependent.
For sure. And also not forgetting that frustration, maybe it started with some sort of frustration, but it can actually, if it's not addressed, tip over into anxiety. So then you've got a bigger problem. But I mean, I know personally, case in point, for my own dog years ago, same dog actually, funnily enough, that did the poops in the house, Maya, her name was, beautiful Rottweiler. She's probably one of the best dogs I've ever owned, actually. She's just such a beautiful soul. But she when she was a teenager and I wasn't home, I was, you know, working in an office, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't know much about dogs then. So, you know, we're always learning and developing. Right. She wasn't getting her needs met at all. And this is definitely a case of frustration. She was a teenager. She didn't know what to do with herself, with her energies, and I wasn't helping. My husband was coming home, two great big holes in the wall. Dug holes in the wall, and the evidence was clear. She had white powder all over her paws, on her snout.
Oh, wow.
Like literally holes in the plasterboard. where she.
Yeah.
So guess what I did? I started exercising her and giving her plenty of adequate exercise and enrichment. Mm-hmm. It was like very quick. Yeah.
It's true, because even with my own dog, if there's a couple of days in a row, and he doesn't have high exercise needs at all, like he's just a pretty low key dog. But if there are a couple of days in a row where we miss our walk, he gets more barky, right? So he's more sensitive to cars driving by or sounds that he might hear outside, where normally those things, well, the Amazon guy's always a problem, let's be real, but otherwise he's not real barky. And but if I miss his walk a couple days in a row, like I'll notice an uptick in that behavior. Absolutely. And so that's not separation related behavior at all, but it does show that not meeting his needs fully does, you know, you see his tail.
Yeah.
does come out in what we would consider undesirable behaviors, right? So that is, you know, something to consider when you're working with any dog with a behavior problem, is making sure that their needs are met.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, it doesn't really matter what behavior problem it is. That's going right. to be part of your training protocol, whether it's separation related or frustration or something completely unrelated, exercise mm-hmm. and enrichment. And I always talk about enrichment as, so a lot of owners think enrichment might be taking them to the dog park or throwing the ball mm-hmm. in the backyard. I mean, for me personally, my definition of enrichment is more the problem solving, the, you know, mental stimulation, but real mm-hmm. problem solving, where they have to use their little gray brain cells to figure something out. And mm-hmm. that really mm-hmm. tires them out.
Yeah, it really does. And you know, you have to kind of know your dog too, right? So if your dog, even in the situation of a dog park, some dogs are super social, and that type of thing is a good piece of the puzzle to have in their exercise and enrichment plan. But like some dogs don't like the dog park, so that wouldn't be a good piece for them. That's not enriching for them because they're not enjoying it, right? So, just knowing your dog and knowing what your dog enjoys, and mixing things up, right? Like, so if you're going on the same walk, or even if it's a sniffy walk, or you're laying a food trail, if you're using the same food on the same trail every day, then, you know, it's a little less enriching than if you have variety in the mix. So,
I have a dog on my lap.
Yes, you do. You know, I think, like we talk about a lot, getting a camera on your dog. So if you're noticing a puddle of drool or urine, or, you know, your dog just seems really like he's panting hard when you come in, or, you know, just anything seems even a little bit off, you know, get a camera on it. And it doesn't have to be you go out and buy a camera. It can be you just set up a laptop and do a Zoom call with yourself.
Yeah. Zoom, or Skype. You could even do a Facebook Live.
Exactly. Like,
none of those things cost a cent.
Exactly. Just get eyes on your dog. And that allows you to put some context on it. Like, does your dog look like they're having the time of their life? Like, you know, tearing through your couch cushions. Well, that's a different problem than a dog that looks like it's, you know, like really stressed and anxious,
but still tearing through the couch.
Yeah. Cushions, right. Yeah. So the behavior can be the same, but just being able to look at the full picture would give you more information as to the best way to work through that with your dog.
Yeah. Yeah. And as next time we chat, we'll talk about the thresholds. And, you know, when you do get that camera on your dog, you can see at what point the dog is losing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so mm-hmm. important. It's, I mean, right. I don't I think without a camera, your chances of fixing the issue are a lot harder, a lot more difficult.
Yeah. And I do think that, you know, if you suspect that your dog has separation anxiety or separation related behaviors, your number one thing is to try to get eyes on it. And if you do see, like, say you're watching it for the first time, you're watching that your dog is starting to show anxious behavior, that's all the information we need. We don't need your dog to go into a full-blown panic to be able to say, yes, your dog has separation anxiety, right? Like, so we're trying to avoid exposing your dog to those scary circumstances. So once you feel like, oh gosh, yes, this is anxiety, don't wait it out longer than that. Just like go back and then reach out for some help. So I think once... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's a common problem that owners do. So they're like, oh, I want to see how long it takes for my dog to bark. Well, if they've actually got to the point where they're barking and they're going over their threshold into the panic, then that's too far. So we need to be able to identify what those signs are leading up to that barking and come back in before that happens.
And then once you have... once you realize that your dog has separation anxiety, one of the big kind of tenets of home alone training is to start managing those absences, right? And so what we mean by that is don't leave your dog home alone for more than they can comfortably manage. So that means, you know, even if you're not working with a professional, maybe you need to save up some money first, or you're traveling and so you're not ready to get into training yet, there's still some things that you can do. You can suspend absences or manage absences, like I said. That will help your dog to start feeling safe, which is a big, you know, kind of part of the training, is that we need them to feel safe. And the other thing that you can start doing right away is building your village. You know, it's unrealistic to think that you can be home with your dog 100% of the time, right? No. So you need to reach out into your community, to your friends, your family, coworkers, maybe just people living in the same area as you, and look for help with your dog, so that you can still live life even when you can't take your dog with you. Thank you guys so much for joining us. As Ness said, if you have not subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do. It is Tales from the Doghouse. And I'm Stacey Bell from Focus Fun. You can find me at focusedfun.net or focusedfundogs on Instagram or Facebook.
And I'm Ness Jones, and this is Bertha. She's sitting here on my lap for those watching on YouTube, and she's a cuddler. I am in Australia from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Next time we are back, we will be talking all about doggy thresholds, what they are and why we use them in our training, and how to identify them. So then, see you next time.
Fabulous. Bye. We'll be right back.